There we go. WTC once again back on the air, on the air and in your ear. It's Woy Talk Comics, and I am joined once again by the three best co-hosts I've had today. That, of course, would be Brett. And Brett is going to tell us what he's been watching, reading, or doing, as well as describe himself to everybody in five words or less. Brett?
Well, let's see now. I've been watching Boardwalk Empire.
Which oh, is no, spoilers. Oh, spoilers.
Well, it's just season one, so I couldn't tell anybody a spoiler anyway, oh. So unless they hadn't watched it. But it's a very good show. So I that'll be the end of my spoiler. And currently, I have a black fake mustache on.
That's how you're describing yourself in five words or less. Okay. Keith, other co-host, co-host number two. What have you been watching, reading, or doing? And describe yourself in five words or less.
I have been reading Geoff Johns' Green Lantern, starting from Rebirth. Finally, trying to settle into that. I tried some of the Battle of the Cowl stuff and still couldn't get into it. I still don't like Grant Morrison's mainstream stuff. But because I really am enjoying Red Lanterns, I wanted to go back and try some of this of John's start of that run. I'm watching Jericho, which was a fantastic TV series from a couple of years back, and I wanted to rewatch it all because I just got the Jericho Season 3 comic book trade paperback, which I haven't read any of yet because I wanted to watch the series and get right into that into the comic series. And in five words or less, I'm awesome. You can now use eight because
you left a okay. Well, maybe Chris will need them. Chris, describe yourself in five words as well as telling us what you've been watching, reading, or doing.
Well, I spent the last 5 days catching up on Filipino exploitation films from the 70s, so I'm a little bit out of it.
That sounds good.
And, I've been catching up on my Marvel. I've sort of dropped off after that whole 52 explosion, so I've now read Spider Island and caught up with the Fantastic Four.
All right.
And I am awesome.
You can't steal. Well, actually, why the hell can he? All right, I'm Mo. I've been reading Infinity War, as well as an excellent Euro book that I recommend everybody called The Killer. And I've been watching old episodes of Taxi, and of course, playing Halo. I'm always playing Halo. But as well, I'm going to describe myself in four words or five words less. I'll go with I'm the fourth host. And today's show is called House of Mystery Topics. And basically the concept of WTC Episode 15, House of Mystery Topics, Issue 1, because we will be doing this, I'm sure, again in the future, is we haven't prepared a topic. We haven't prepared anything. There's been no research done, nothing like that. What we're trying to do here is bring out the host personalities a little bit, have a little bit of debate maybe, kind of surprise each other, and hopefully have some fun, have some laughs. And if you're not careful, you might just learn something, too. So, everyone, we're going to start off with Brett. We're going to go with the snake format. We'll start with Brett, then we'll go to Keith, then we'll go to Chris, then go to me, and then me, Chris, Keith, and Brett to bring up the rear. Everybody's got a couple topics. Hopefully, we've all got original topics. Brett, start us off with a bang.
With a bang? I'll just shoot you, though. That seems the easiest. But, no, I think my first topic is really... just a brand new thing that's coming out now is that everything is going day and date. Dark Horse just announced that they're going day and date. DC's going day and date. Marvel's going day and date. So pretty much everybody is. And, Keith was kind enough to tweet along a little article. I know it's
never
happens. Shocking, doesn't it?
4 billion times a day. Anyways, go ahead. If you follow Keith, and I recommend you do, they're entertaining, but turn it off. Don't no longer have those texts come to your phone or the tweets come as text to your phone. I'm just going to recommend that.
Yeah, my phone battery dies so fast.
All right. Anyways, Brett, you're saying day and date.
Well, and he tweeted along an article that has an interview with Brian Wood. And Brian Wood is one of my favorite creators. And it's interesting because he talks about like the potential income that he can receive from the digital factor, and the fact that you know, he's had to take a lot of hits personally because of the way the industry is going. And so he hopes that, and I'm quoting here, he says, "I don't mind bleeding a little, and one ray of hope has been digital. The potential it has to maybe, just maybe, keep some of us going through these lean times. But like I said, we can never explore that potential to even just see if it's there as long as current pricing stays locked in." And I think that, you know, there's been a big backlash from the, because Dark Horse tried to set a lower price point, but the stores were pushing back to not let them set that low price point. So the stores are still trying to keep digital pricing fairly high. Whereas I think that, you know, all the fans and I think even a lot of the creators would prefer a lower pricing.
And this is, I think this is interesting coming off of the conversation we had at Mike at Phoenix North about digital comics last week, Brett. Keith, your thoughts
on
that?
I will make one more.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm just going to make one more point, is that, you know, Brian talks about how, about the potential of some people exploring their options outside of the industry. And I just think that if there is a comic book industry that doesn't have Brian Wood, then I think that the comic book industry is a lesser place for it.
All right, Keith, your thoughts.
Well, this is a hot topic right now, and it's something that the stores are reacting very fast to, generally, unfortunately, negative. There's been a lot. Every time someone makes a move to try something different in the digital world, the stores react kind of very quickly. The loudest stores are on the comic market hashtag on Twitter, and they kind of gang up really fast. And this happened on Avenging Spider-Man when they had the free digital copy, which we all thought was a great idea. We had actually been talking about that before Avenging Spider-Man was announced. But the stores felt that, some stores, I should say, felt that they were trying to poach print buyers by capturing information. My day job's an evil marketer, so yes, of course they were trying to get your information, but they're a business. They don't want to shrink their sales, period. They want to grow both fields. And Dark Horse, it's a bit of messaging confusion, because they later walked it back and said that it was just a misunderstanding. They had never intended it to sound like they were doing cheap day and date. I think everyone was pretty clear when it was first announced that it was going to be cheaper day and date, which no one has done yet. Everyone's been going with, you know, dropping the price after a month. Marvel has just announced an interesting interesting offer where, and this is getting close to what we've been talking about of how the comic stores and digital providers can work together. Marvel will have a deal through Comixology that when you sign up and buy your first Marvel comic through Comixology, you will get a $5 coupon to be used at a local comic store. And so you tell them what your local comic store is, you get your coupon, you take it to your store, and then they have a way of getting that $5 back from Marvel, which is great. But again, it doesn't change the simple fact that they're collecting all of your information while you do that, including what store you go to. Mm-hmm. So it's a hot button. And the stores are not wanting to find ways to work in this new system.
Chris, your thoughts?
I can't say that I love that they're collecting all our information. On the other hand, we're evolving right now, and it's too early to say which way everybody's going to go, because every company has a different plan. So I'm taking a wait-and-see attitude towards the whole thing. I'm really unsure where digital is going and where the comic book industry is going. I'm kind of scared for the comic book retailers, but they have to evolve with the times, and maybe there isn't a place for them. I really don't know, but as long as they got the merch, I think there's going to be a place. It'll be smaller, but there will be a place.
I think the thing is that nobody wants the retailers to go out of business. Like, none of the big, you know, publishers want it. None of the creators want it. Obviously, none of the stores do. And I don't think the fans do either. But I think that they have to learn how to live within that same space as digital.
Well, it's very interesting because, and we saw an industry where, in this city, I think there was, about 12 stores at one point, and it got down to about 4. What are we at now? 6?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
You know, something like that. So, the industry at one point had a boom, had a market crash, and then has come back. Fairly, I would call it, you're not going to get rich doing it, but it's has a more steady base. 3 of the 4 of us worked on the retail side. Brett and I owned a store together. Keith ran the comics section of a large store. Chris bought from every store that ever existed. It is interesting. I mean, I think we'd be talking about this for a long time. It could be inevitable that digital go away. Chris says that as long as they have merchandise, well, merchandise can be got over the internet as well, and how quickly and how conveniently and how cheaply. That is changing as well. I don't want the retailers to go away because I was one once. But on the other hand, it becomes a question. If it's best for the industry, for the retailers to go away, but that those people suffer, but more people, what is better? It's the old Spock line, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. Are we kind of seeing that to some degree? Brett, what do you think?
I think it's a hard thing to argue because, again, I don't believe that anybody wants to see it. I don't think that we are going to see it. I think that we're going to see an evolution, but, and again, maybe we'll see half those stores go away, for those people who just aren't willing to evolve. But there's going to be somebody who's willing to evolve and is willing to find a new business model. And once that new business model is found, well, then we'll have a new era of comic book store.
I think there's something to be said for that. While I said that the needs of the many outweighed the needs of the one in Star Trek II and Star Trek III, the needs of the one outweighed the needs of the many. So, who knows what the right answer is here? That's what happened, anyways. Any last thoughts on this topic? Really good topic, Brett, to throw it out there. You caught us off guard with it. A little heavy, but a hell of a good topic. Last thoughts from everybody. Keith?
Well, I think that what we're still waiting for in digital is the killer app, the format that ends all formats, like MP3 did with music. The illegal format of music for ages was there was MP2s and there was WMV files or WMA files, I suppose, and Real Player and all these different formats. And everyone that was trying to sell digital music had their own format that only worked with their own player. And that's currently one of the problems that is holding people back from some digital is that there is no sense that when you've purchased a comic, there's any ownership. Because you have to read it through their viewer. You have to decide, they decide the ways that you're going to use that thing that you've purchased. Now, iTunes won the digital downloading age by using MP3s and MP4s that were then usable in pretty much everything else. And by taking this format that had been popularized in the illegal world and making it legal, then it was something you could then put into your player, whether it was an Apple player or not.
So are you saying that...
And that's what we're looking for.
Are you saying essentially you think that not only do we need a format that is agreed upon, just essentially the industry needs to come together, put everything, instead of putting all these business plans of their own aside, come together as an industry on this and outside publishers work together in some way to become of like mind?
It seems like a dream, but it is what happened to music. It is everyone wanted to do their own thing, and I mean, it happened in the Blu-ray versus HD DVD. It happened in VHS beta. Eventually, a format wins out, and then everyone rises fast.
What formats?
Blu-ray had an HD DVD had.
What formats currently exist that you can read a digital comic on?
The common ones that are being used are PDF and CBZ or CBR. But outside of that, you have Marvel's Reader, you have DC's Reader, you have Comixology's Reader, and there's Graphically. There's a bunch of other sites that do various formats. I love what Slave Labor has done, which is that you can purchase a comic from Slave Labor in usually three different formats, one of them being CBZ. And they say in big, bold letters, please don't pirate comics. You're stealing. But we know that people have gotten used to using this format because of illegal comics, and we wanted to offer it in a format you're used to.
Okay. You know, I recently purchased some independent books for us from Tyler James and Mike Luoma. Am I saying that right now? How do we say it?
Yep, Mike Luoma, who's probably listening because he is a regular listener.
And he seems like an awesome dude. So I purchased some of their books, and these books came to me in PDF format. And while they're readable in digital PDF format, I find that to be the least intuitively, when it comes in that format, I don't find it to work with the reader I use as well. And that's disappointing. I find that, I just, the PDF format to me, I mean, these came in watermarked PDF format, and I wish there was something else that, some other way that we could approach this. Brett, you seem to have a thought there.
It is going to be one of those really difficult format. Like PDF is a tough format because it's really hard to get the size right. I think that some of the new readers that we're starting to see come out, like the Fire and stuff like that, I think that they're going to be a different way of reading. And so I think that maybe the tablet is something that we have to look at when we do go and work on a format.
Well, but, how about this? Yeah.
It's going to be a long.
You mean the Kindle Fire? I mean, is right now great for a lot of people will go in, they can purchase their Barnes and Nobles or whatever online, and they can read all their books, and they should be able to buy from the same. Should the same retailer be where they get online books be also where you're getting online comics? Chris, what do you think of that?
I actually think a Netflix model is going to be the way to go. Where you can sign up for $8 a month or so much and get unlimited back issues and like that for a period of time. As far as the PDF, I think it's just your reader. You have to experiment with several before you can get a really good one for reading comic books.
Well, yeah, so it depends obviously, the reader I'm using on my laptop is different than the reader I'm using on my tablet, for instance. And I just find that no reader I've found, readers that I find that are good for the CBR format, the PDF, it doesn't seem to work as well. I don't know. I don't like the PDF format as much, to be honest with you, personally. Brett, what are you thinking over there? I see your brain, you're raising your face up in an odd expression. Making me think that you're trying to formulate a thought.
Well, I was going to mention that Marvel actually currently has for their back issues, they currently have that Netflix style format where you can pretty much buy, you know, a monthly subscription and just go in and read every single back issue that they have. Their new stuff though is only available on Comixology.
Interesting.
And it's it's fairly limited to the number of books they have there too.
Yeah, they haven't.
You mean on the back issue site?
Yeah, they haven't opened up their entire library or anything. There's
like Netflix in Canada is what you're saying.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Good point. Good point.
It's not really. I don't think it's available in Canada.
No, I'm pretty sure it is.
It is? Okay.
Awesome. You know what? That's pretty good considering nobody had any research or knew that was coming. Great topic, Brett, and had a lot of good discussion on it. In fact, if every one of our topics go like that, we'll have one more.
I'm just going to finish it off with Brian Wood's last point. He said, "I'll have to bleed a little more so that others can bleed a little less. The problem with that, to really keep abusing this metaphor, is that eventually I'll just keel over and die from it." So hopefully he doesn't.
Yeah, I hope so too. All right, Keith, your next topic.
Now, Bleeding Cool, who I refer to as the Us Magazine of comic book websites, they are a gossip site as well as a news site, so you can't always take their info for face value. They've been reporting for a long time, but a new burst just recently about Watchmen 2, which would be prequel miniseries to Watchmen. And they're talking about Andy Kubert has signed. No one else is talking about this. Every other news story you find just refers back to Bleeding Cool. And it's not Watchmen 2 I want to talk about, though.
Oh, too bad, because that's sometimes a topic.
Well, and it's mostly because I do have a polite feud with Rich Johnston, who runs Bleeding Cool. If you look at our Twitters, we've had some back and forths. Other people get more heated than I do. But I do think that it's a gossip site.
Did you like how I supported you on that, even though, I mean, I don't even
yes,
like
I
you?
Yes, I did. And so did Mike Luoma, who jumped in
and he
said,
he liked you, unlike me.
Bleeding Cool has never talked about Mike's comics, and we have, so screw him. We're talking about Small Press and
The Adventures of Alibi Jones, everybody. It's available on, Drive-Thru Comics? I believe that's where I purchased them.
Drive-Thru Comics, you get a digital, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not Watchmen 2 I want to talk about, and I want to call it Watchmen 1/2, and I wish they'd stop calling it Watchmen 2 because it's a prequel. Watchmen 0, Watchmen 1/2, 0.5, 0.1, whatever, anything that's not 2. Sometimes
how about we call it Watchmen. They haven't quite finished the N.
Actually, I think that Minutemen was the best title I heard.
Yeah, I think that's probably taken.
Before Watchmen was Minutemen. There's your ad campaign. Just handing that one out. That's my.
Yeah, I think that's
a good thing you're not talking about it.
I think that's already copyrighted somewhere else. But anyways.
So sometimes you can go back to the well, as they say, and it works. And sometimes you go back to the well and you wish it never happened. That it just took away from the wonderfulness that came before. So sometimes you go back and
are we talking about Frank Miller here?
We can. Sometimes you make Jaws 4, and there's nothing about Jaws that has changed because you made Jaws 4. Sometimes you make the other two Matrix movies, and something is a little different about the Matrix after having seen the other two. It does take away a little bit from when you see the Matrix again. And, you know, Star Wars may have a little of that, too. Certainly Return of the Jedi is not as good after you start comparing it to the prequels, because you're like, it's really the prequels as good as Return of the Jedi was, so... So that's my question for you guys is, trying to stick to comics, when people have gone back to the well, written a sequel or returned characters after a long break, ones that worked and ones that didn't work. Good ones and bad ones. And go with Frank Miller. Actually, there's a couple of examples of Frank Miller, I think, of both.
All right, Keith, Chris, why don't you thought ones that worked and ones that didn't work, where they went back to the well?
Okay, Sam and Misty Theater, they went back for a limited series. It didn't work. Of course, they had a different creative team. Strike Force Mordag, if you're going to get a little bit obscure, they went back for a limited series. It didn't work. I don't think after a long break it can work. And please correct my pronunciation on Strike Force.
Strike Force Morituri.
Morituri. Okay.
For those who are about to die, yes.
I had no idea what the hell he was talking about.
Dude, yeah,
at least you're able to correct
he is.
I like Strike Force.
He is digging
it. That one may show up on a $4 list right there. I like
Strike. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was saving it, but now it's out.
No, and now it's just a preview.
Yes.
I can think of a lot of instances where something happens where it appears to be something that is an unrelated story and then gets later on worked into the regular series, you know, and things like that. Does that count?
I don't think so.
No,
probably not.
I don't even know what you were talking about versus our
Dark Knight 2 would be one I would throw in there.
Yeah, Dark Knight 2 is absolutely in there.
Coming back about 15 years later, he's Frank Miller, not the writer he was then. He doesn't see the world the way he did then.
To put it in another perspective, how about DC hiring John Byrne to do Superman Year One, essentially, what was it, the Man of Steel miniseries?
Man of Steel.
And then a few years later, deciding they need to do the same thing, Marvel hiring John Byrne to do Spider-Man Year One, essentially rebooting it, and it shit the bed. So, it's not quite the same, but it is the same, and there's the exact same creator and the same idea, looking to do the same thing, except for he wasn't the writer he once was. So there's that one. Does that count? No.
I don't know.
It's no question. It's your rules.
I mean, I can think of three things, but it's always the creator, like the ones that I'm thinking of, the creator is coming back to a work, especially a work that made them famous. You know, I think that like Peter David returned to the Hulk after a layoff. Now, do I think his second run on the Hulk was as good as the first? No, by no means. Chris Claremont returned to the X-Men after an extremely long layoff. Do I like those books? No, I don't like those books. You know, but at the same time, like, I think there was a layoff for Sergio between, Gru when he left Epic and Gru once he got to Image. Do I love it, like the Image books? I loved the Image books. I thought that they were actually better than some of the last Epic books.
That was good stuff. So, that was some of his best work.
Yeah, like, I feel like he almost re-energized himself by going off of the title for a bit.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. All right. I can't really think of any.
I have an interesting theory on this, actually, now.
Okay, go ahead.
The amount of time the layoff is, the longer the amount of time, the worse the comeback is.
What? Huh?
No, I understand that.
Take a 10-year break, the return is going to be so much worse than if you came back in 5 years.
Well, you know what? Here's one. When Frank Miller left, and Frank Miller did Daredevil, he returned and did the Man of Fear miniseries with John Romita Jr., and that was tremendous as well. That's one where he came back, and he was still a good writer. And it was almost as good as his original Daredevil run. It was a great series, great miniseries. So there's one.
It was also very different.
Was it?
It was, but again, he's a different writer. It had a different artist.
I don't know that it was very different. I mean, it was an origin.
I just didn't feel it had the same I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the artist's name. Michelina? On the first run with Miller?
Mazzucchelli.
Michelina, I think that's a writer. If you're thinking of David.
He's a writer, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. But anyway,
that's okay. Brett's here to correct those fucking things.
I looked at
my profanity like 6 weeks, guys. But at least the F bomb.
I didn't feel it had the same noir style as his first run.
You know what? When's the last time you read it? Because maybe I think it was one I'd recommend you go back and reading again. Because at the time you might have been disappointed that it wasn't as good, but it really holds up quite well.
Well, it did have the yellow costume, so.
No, it didn't.
But, yeah.
No, you're thinking of,
Let's go back.
Daredevil
yellow?
It didn't have, what was it, Jeff Loeb and,
Yeah, yellow.
Yeah.
You know what, that's what I'm thinking of. I actually can't remember
that. I would have to say that is not some of Frank Miller's best work.
Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
And that it was written by
Daredevil yellow is, yeah, no. Yeah. That was when Jeff Loeb wrote that, Frank Miller did not do his best work. Yes, that's true.
No.
Although,
my mistake.
Currently, I might be more than happy to read Jeff Loeb versus Frank Miller.
You didn't read Batman Superman, so that might change your mind if you did. Maybe you just don't want to read either one of them.
No,
all right.
I probably don't.
Chris, your topic.
My topic. Okay. My question for you guys is, has Marvel ever successfully, in your view, turned a villain into a hero and had it work within the Marvel universe?
Oh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I would say yes.
Magneto.
That's who I was going to say.
Magneto, he's still not a pure hero, which I really like. He has developed over the years slowly. Sometimes he seems to go way too far toward the good side and way back toward the other side. But he's a complex character, and that's one thing I really like. Even right now when he's mentoring Cyclops in Uncanny X-Men, which is really cool. It had a bit of controversy about the first issue and everything that people had a problem with, I loved in that book. And he's mentoring Cyclops in a way that you're not entirely sure that you agree with the direction that they want to take mutant kind. And I really enjoy that ambiguity in the characters. Yeah, he's definitely the one I put at the top of that list.
And now that we're going to see X-Men versus the Avengers in the coming year, I think that that Magneto will be that an interesting character to watch.
Well, how about a character like, I don't know, I think you see it all the time, a character who the very first time they show up, they are a villain, and you almost wonder if that was the way the character was meant to be introduced, or was that a character that was meant to be a villain that they decided they changed their mind? Like,
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye was a good example. I was going to use Wonder Man. I think he was an example of
Wonder Man as well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, does that count? Or does it need to be somebody who is that villain for a long, long time? Spider-Man had a villain, and I'm having trouble remembering the name. The Living Vampire, Mobius, whatever.
Morbius.
Thank you. Yeah, he was a villain, Spider-Man villain for quite a while. He became a hero in the 90s, and I quite like his series. I think that was a good turn because it made sense, you know. I'm trying to think of some others that...
Although I didn't think it fit within the Marvel Universe.
How could it? Why don't you think it fit within the Marvel Universe, Chris?
I believe you're referring to the Midnight Suns, Living Vampire, correct?
Well, mm-hmm. They did that before the Midnight Suns. The Midnight Suns became later on.
I just didn't think there was no Midnight Suns. Teaming him with another mainstream Marvel character and have it work. Just like the Punisher is supposedly in the Marvel Universe, I don't think he's ever successfully worked within a team-up situation, really.
I would agree with that on the Punisher, but the thing is, the character was a Spider-Man villain who you wouldn't... Keith obviously wouldn't from the expression. I'll let him talk in a second here. But I know what you're saying, but this is a Spider-Man villain who then became a hero within that universe, and the Midnight Sun thing happened like 4 years later. So, I mean, he had a series for a long time first. I mean, when his series was canceled, then the Midnight Suns was about starting. So,
well, they just needed a place to put him. Like, it's a struggle to put a vampire in the regular Marvel Universe. So once they realized that they had, like, Blade and Doctor Strange and stuff like that, then it seemed a way to put them all together.
Well, part of that was sales-driven, too, is because Ghost Rider was the hot book at the time. So they added Spirits of Vengeance title that had Johnny Blaze in it, and then just started expanding out that that imprint.
Okay, how about Venom? Does Venom count?
Venom, but I don't think he's ever worked. I've hated the character until the newest incarnation, which is a different Venom. So I don't think it counts.
I wouldn't count the current Venom. It is because it's not Eddie Brock.
No, it's not the same. But Eddie Brock was certainly a villain. And he was extremely popular, and then he had a series of miniseries, and they were sales work.
Yes, and does anyone not qualify for Burn the Book?
I think the first couple of them were okay, but it was certainly the law of diminishing returns. And the character became weakened as it got on, but I think an argument could be made that that was successfully turned. Lobo was introduced as a villain.
Yes, I think DC can do it. I don't think Marvel can.
Yeah, good point.
I'm gonna say Vision, Scarlet Witch, and Punisher.
Yeah, there's three.
Quicksilver.
Not Vision, sorry, Quicksilver.
Yeah.
And Punisher, I would say I prefer Vision, I think, Punisher's
I
books.
I think Vision is, falls under that same, it was probably part of the storyline to always turn him.
Probably. Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, who I was thinking of, who were villains when they were first introduced in X-Men with Magneto. But Punisher was introduced as a villain.
That's right.
And I prefer Punisher stories that are outside the Marvel Universe, the Marvel Knights and Max lines. But any story, when you put the Punisher and Daredevil together, it's a really cool dynamic. And when you put Punisher and Wolverine together, it's an interesting dynamic. And I think that that character does fit. Punisher and Captain America is a really great interaction. And yeah, that's a character that, again, like Magneto, he stayed complex. He's not,
there are
he went
characters,
through a bit
though,
of a, just a superhero.
There are
phase,
characters
but.
That they try to turn into heroes like Sabretooth that it just didn't work. And they tried, mm-hmm. there's times when the popularity of a villain makes them think that they need to turn it into, you know, but I think there's a lot of times in the Shades of Grey, and you can mention some other characters, quite a few characters, I think, actually within that X-Men universe that kind of fall in there, you know?
I think that'd be something you'd be used to from your following wrestling, though, is the things like Venom and Sabretooth where they come popular and then you feel like you're supposed to make them into a good guy so you can give them their own book.
Yeah. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up going back. And it's true, actually. You know what? There is a correlation along those lines. I think you're right.
And I can't believe that we're leaving out the Thunderbolts, you know, which is one of those really interesting attempts by Marvel to take a cluster of bad guys and try to turn them good. And I think in some cases they succeeded. So
yeah, but to some degree, when they first showed up, there was no intention to turn them good. I never got.
Yeah,
that
they're kind of Marvel's Suicide Squad originally.
Yeah,
exactly. I think there was an intention to turn some of them good. Yeah. There was an intention, though, to leave some of them bad.
Okay, interesting. All right,
I was unsure, but I wanted to hear you guys' take on it.
Okay, no, good topic. All right, I'm going to throw one out there, and one that I almost tried is my turn. I'm going to try to throw it out there again because I tried one time and Brett just said he liked pretty pictures. So we can come back to this. When Keith said that he wanted to come on the show, it was because he was enjoying listening to me and Brett talk, and he wanted to have a chance to discuss.
And who wouldn't?
Yeah, well, me. But, no, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Brett, edit that. But anyways... Keith wanted to talk to people who also love the medium. And I would like everybody to kind of take the time to explain what it is that makes comic books, in their view, a unique and entertaining medium, that what it is that attracts them to it. So, Brett, why don't you take your shot?
I like the way they put the words.
I'm going to not use a second profanity. I'm not going to drop another F-bomb. Brett, you're lucky you're all the way over there. Oh, come on, Brett. What is it about comic books for you?
I think the thing about comic books is that they are able to tell... I mean, you know, like, and I think it's the same way in books to a certain degree, but they do have the pictures and that kind of thing. I think it's a great way of combining the visual with... You know, with the written word, and kind of bringing the best of two worlds together, and you can really tell any type of story that you want to. You know, whereas I may have started with superhero books, I graduated into more serious books, but I still find a lot of superhero, and so I think that you're able to tell more serious stories, but you're able to tell funny stories, you're able to tell, like, over-the-top superhero, and, you know, you can tell adult stories if you're so inclined, but you can tell anything within the medium.
But isn't that true of...
And they have pretty pictures.
Isn't that true of everything?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can tell any story in, like, just a standard book setting, a novel setting, but you don't have pictures. Like, the art, like, and it's true, the artist, though, like, is Sin City written out? Anything like Sin City in a comic book form? No.
No, that's true.
It would not
be.
No,
I'd agree. Yeah, you read those adaptations, even by really good writers, of Kingdom Come or Death of Superman, and they're not the same experience. Because it is that marriage of words and pictures. You know, if the old saying a picture tells 1,000 words is true, then you have 100,000 words in every comic book.
Nice. So Keith, is that kind of that? Would that do you think that kind of explains how you feel about it? Is that your, like you say, when you wanted to talk to us, when you wanted to get on this and talk about it, what was it about it what is it you wanted to express ultimately about the way you feel about comic books?
I do love the format. I love the versatility for sure. And I love that it is hard to put into words. I think I love serialized stories in general. I've given up on television that's episodic. I just don't watch it. I like being rewarded for long time patronage, for lack of a better word. I only watch TV shows that build on past episodes. I'm not at all interested in something that's a one-off. And comics are like that. Movie serials were like that. That you go back and you get a little bit more of the story, and then a little bit more of the story. And novels don't feel that way. And the way that I read novels is different than the way I read comics. And I get lost in the world of the comic more than I do in books, because I have less of that translation of the words into images, because the images are there. And it's firing my brain in different ways. And people complain about TV not activating the part of your brain that processes words into images. Well, the comic book does do that, because it still has words that are making your images. But it's also got images, so it's firing all of those sections of your brain that deal with decoding the information that you're seeing with your eyes. It's got a lot more happening, and it's compared a lot to, you know, being the closest thing to film without being film. And it's more active, I think, than a book is, or than a movie or a TV show is, because it's bridging those things. It's putting together the various parts of your brain into a different experience.
Awesome. You know what? That's both of you guys. That's great. I think, honestly, if I had anybody who doesn't understand why they should read comic books, why it should be mandatory in all schools, the kids read comic books. You just nailed it. All right, Chris.
For me, comic books are the closest I can get to being inside the writer's head. With a novel, I'm interpreting it. I'm adding my own stuff to it as I'm reading, because I have to make up what these people look like, settings and like that. In a comic book, it's interpreted for me, and in a different way than I would do myself. Added to the fact that in the comic book medium, you can tell any story without budget constraints, without producers adding their two bits, as in the movies or something like that. You can tell anything, no matter how broad or small your audience may be. You don't have to pander them as much, because a comic book is considered successful if you can get a couple thousand people to read it, whereas you need a larger audience for film.
I'm not sure when I was 5 years old why I picked up a comic book and loved it, but I can tell you now that I'm older that when I pick up one, I still feel like that five-year-old kid to some degree, even if I'm reading something more mature, more adult. And I love the idea that comic books can be made from anywhere from 1 to 7 people making this, rather than a crew of 200. I feel comic books are, and this is true of books as well, but comic books to me are more personal from the creators than any other medium. And I feel like they're sharing something personally with me when I read them, because I do understand what they're giving me, but I do also have my own interpretation. can almost be nothing left in the translation. You understand it, and when it really comes together, it's just nothing like it. So, love me some comic books.
All right. Let's not forget big boobies.
Yeah, a lot.
And yes.
Hey.
Nice bums and big boobies.
Yes, yes.
And the pretty pictures. Let's,
not forget the pretty pictures. Yes. Yes. I like me some pretty pictures. All right.
I got to say, I am frightened, though, that, Chris is right. You are inside the mind of the author and the artist. And when a book like Holy Terror crosses the table, that's not a happy place.
Yeah.
He's a pretty skinny dude. I think anyone can take him out if he ever goes drastically astray.
He already has.
He hasn't hurt anybody as far as I know.
I don't know.
He didn't finish Holy Terror. Oh, man. All right. All right, we're going to move on to the next subject. And what I'm going to do is, like I say, it's a snake format, so it gets to meet me again and then back to Chris. And I'm going to do something I do with you guys. Everyone will know this. Anybody might have listened to We Talk Wrestling will know this one. A little game I always play called This or That. So, Brett, Batman, and everybody afterwards, you can agree or disagree. Brett, Batman or Spider-Man?
That's a good question. I'm going to go with Spider-Man because he was more of my first love.
Agree or disagree, Brett? Or with Brett there, Chris and Keith?
I agree. Spider-Man. A year ago, you would have to fight me. I love Batman, but with 52 sucking so incredibly much, and Spider-Island really, really sort of Truman my biscuits, so to speak, I have to go with Spider-Man.
Keith?
Batman.
And why?
I think, and this is something we talked about that frustrated us with the New 52, was these characters are so iconic, Superman, Batman particularly. And, I saw an article the other day that was talking about versions of Batman that they didn't like, and really what they were talking about was Elseworlds. They talked about, new interpretations or something like that, but it was a list of Elseworlds books. And what I find fascinating is that you can do, 50 different Elseworlds books, and still Batman is recognizable in these. You change where he is, you change who his parents were, whether he's in the 1800s or he's a vampire or all of these things, you still recognize the core of that character. I don't think that that's the case if you use Spider-Man. There's something so archetypal, so pure about the way that this character was created, and Superman the same, that the broad strokes of his parents die, Bat comes in the window. You can actually get the entire character from those two things.
I think you can do the same thing from Peter Parker and his, has a chance to stop the man who kills his uncle, selfishly doesn't, carries that guilt and tries to make atone for that for the rest of his life. I think that's, I don't necessarily agree with what you're saying there, Keith, though I understand your point of view, but I don't necessarily agree with that last point. The first part, I knew what you're saying, but that last part, I think that argument is not quite there, that it's so archetypal and that you wouldn't understand. If you put Spider-Man in the 1800s, I still think you'd understand it. I disagree with that.
You can't swing from skyscrapers in the 1800s.
Can't fly a black bat plane in the 1800s either. So
nobody can have a bat horse and buggy.
He can swing from trees. Spider Tarzan. Anyways.
Yes, with great power comes great responsibility to,
save Jane. Okay, well, I'm personally good with Spider-Man because I find a more relatable character. But I'll say this, I've read more good Batman stories. I think he's more diverse, but when Spider-Man is at his best, that's the character that I would rather read. All right, Keith, I'm moving on to you. It's the same idea. We're playing This or That. I've got a round for everybody. So yours is Wolverine or Daredevil?
Daredevil.
All right, why?
I've never been a big Wolverine fan, and maybe it is that level of complexity of explaining the character. Like, I accept your point on Spider-Man. I think he's still a bit more complex, but again, Daredevil's got very simple motivations, and I think that that character translates well into a detective story, a superhero story, you can put him in a cosmic story. You don't often see that. But Wolverine, I don't know, there's something...
I've seen Wolverine in a bit one-dimensional stories. I've seen him in...
He's a bit one-dimensional for me, though. He's just...
But I have seen him in noir-type stories. I have seen him in superhero stories. I have seen him in these different settings as well.
Yeah, but it's the character itself just doesn't flex.
Okay.
I think it's the best way I can put that.
Okay. Chris, your thoughts on that?
Okay. I love Wolverine, but I'm going with Daredevil. Wolverine has the lower of the two lows. A bad Wolverine is terrible. Yet, no matter who's writing Daredevil, I always find it readable. I love Matt Murdock. I have a relationship with Matt Murdock. Whereas Logan, I could care less. He could be anybody under the costume. As long as he's tearing stuff up and saying, I'm the best that I ever was. It's really all you need for Wolverine. It's kind of
He's the best he is at what he does, but what he does is very nice.
Very nice, yes.
You know what? I also go with Daredevil, and it's really funny because, I mean, that Claremont and Miller miniseries that launched the regular series for Wolverine, I mean, that's as good as comics get. You know, but you could say that about many Daredevil stories too. I prefer Daredevil at the end of the day. I just find him. I wish Wolverine's a more popular character, and it's really funny that the first three of us have chosen Daredevil, whereas Wolverine is in both pop culture and the superhero comic book world the much more popular, well known character. Brett, your thoughts?
Well, for me, this one isn't even close. Like, I have Daredevil so far ahead of Wolverine, it's not even funny. And the main reason is because I find Daredevil a little more relatable, but my biggest problem with Wolverine is that I've generally considered him overpowered for a long time. Like, he's one of those characters that he almost seems impossible to beat in any given situation. And so that annoys me. Like, they tried to fix it by giving him bone claws, but, you know, it just kicked in his healing factor that much more, and it doesn't do anything.
You know what, Brett? I gotta say, this is something that I think is not just him. Like, I will never forget, I think my introduction to the character was in one of those Marvel, Marvel Universe Presents, or one of the...
Marvel Comics Presents?
Comics.
No, not Marvel Comics Presents. I'm sorry, the handbook, of the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, one of those. I guess that's what they were called. And I remember seeing the guy was listed as being 5'4" and like 300 pounds, because he has the skeleton. But could lift weight. I remember, forget this. He could lift press, as they used to put it. Lift press 500 pounds. And I was like, okay, so he's human. And then you would see him in the books, and like you say, he is really powerful. This guy go toe-to-toe with anybody. He's out there with the Beyonder, for Christ's sakes. Like, this was ridiculous. But it's not just him. Spider-Man was listed as having a certain strength level and is constantly seemed to get higher. Superman was to the point where they had to reboot him. Brent Byrne had to reboot him because the guy was moving planets with his pinky. Like, it's kind of a problem with comic books, and not just with Wolverine. The characters simply become, as more creators take over them, they simply kind of ramp up the power levels, I think.
But I don't think we see that nearly as much with Daredevil.
No, not Daredevil. Actually, not Daredevil. Thank God. all right, Chris, your turn.
I just wanted to add in the new run on Daredevil is excellent. If anyone hasn't read it yet,
I haven't.
Really liking Mark Waid stuff.
Really liking whose stuff?
Mark Waid writing it.
Yeah, you really like the, that's something.
Not an obvious choice. I was against it when I first heard.
That's what I was going to say. That's not a sentence I've heard in the 2000s very much.
They've taken out a little bit of the grit, which I thought was a wrong move, but it's really working for the character.
Actually, they've done that before. Well, Joe Kelly wrote that series many years ago. He kind of made him a more lighthearted character as well. And you know what? That is interesting that Daredevil can be a little more lighthearted or be that gritty character as well. So, kind of like Spider-Man.
I want to check into that book.
Pardon me?
I want to check into Daredevil after a few more issues. I tried the first two. And it was so bogged down in trying to put back together his secret identity that I thought it just was all very clunky.
Was it?
I would never before have I wished for Doctor Strange to work.
Just to get back on that one, we talked about loving. Look, I just had this thought. You talked about it being bogged down. That's another thing that's great about comic books. I can read a comic book that is really great, incredibly text heavy, and I can read a comic book that has three words in the whole thing, and is great. You know, it's something else unique about the medium. All right, Chris, let's go with you and give you Dark Horse or Vertigo?
Vertigo.
Why?
Vertigo, as it was in the 90s, was my absolute favorite. Dark Horse, I've always had a decent relationship with Dark Horse, but getting charged so much money has always dampen my enjoyment of their books. When I'm paying a couple bucks more for any Dark Horse book, every time I pick one up, it's like, did I really pay that much money for it?
Interesting.
You
know, I've personally, I probably enjoyed the quality of Vertigo more than any other line, but I really think that what Dark Horse has done for the industry has been largely underappreciated. So I personally would go Dark Horse. Brett, your thoughts?
Well, I have to go with Vertigo, and it's just because if I was to make that list of like my top 10 favorite series of all time, 7 would have come out on like Vertigo or something like that. I mean, it's just astronomical.
Come out on Dark Horse?
No.
No?
There's series that I really enjoy that have come out on Dark Horse, but that I couldn't justify them as like versus my favorite series, like versus Sandman, versus Fables, versus Sandman Mystery Theater, stuff like that. You know, like I just can't justify a Dark Horse title. And there's some great ones, absolutely. But
all right, Sin City.
I couldn't rightfully put it up there.
Okay. All right, interesting. All right, Keith.
I'm the same. Yes, there are Dark Horse books I like, but if I had to list all of my favorite Dark Horses, it would be a list of 5 or 10. And if I had to list all of my Vertigos, we'd be here the rest of the podcast and maybe further. It is my favorite imprint ever. And, you know, half of my bookshelf are Vertigo books. I have those gorgeous Absolute Sandman collections that I saved and saved for. Hellblazer. All that stuff. Yeah, there are stuff I like from Dark Horse, of course. And it's, you know, when you give us this or that, it's the implication that the other one is crap is a bit far, because certainly all of the Buffy Season 8 trades are on my shelf as well. But I would say Vertigo by, you know, a 90 to 10 margin.
Wow. Absolutely. What about the idea that Vertigo, I don't know, would Epic or Dark Horse, either one of them, their existence have given DC some guts to go in the direction of Vertigo, or do you think it would have naturally evolved regardless?
I'd say Epic. Epic's a better analog. Okay. I mean, certainly what was happening was that DC and Marvel were both experimenting with mature readers' books for the direct market, and Epic started, and it was much earlier. DC had been integrating their mature readers' books. So you had Sandman, you had Hellblazer, Animal Man, Shade. All of these existed in the DC universe in some way or another, but were all DC imprint books. And when they launched Vertigo, Doom Patrol, I guess, and then they launched Vertigo, taking those books as their starting point, and then launched a whole bunch of new stuff to go with it. But yeah, Epic's probably the best comparison.
I would love to. I don't know if anybody else would. I'd love to go back, read a whole bunch of Epic, and do a history of the Epic and their legacy sometime as a podcast. But if anybody else would ever be up for that, I think that'd be a lot of fun. And finally,
start planning for that for next December. Though.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, one last this or that, even though I've gone on with this topic way too long, but just real quick, I'm just curious. Brett, Star Trek comics or Star Wars comics?
Oh, Star Wars comics.
Keith?
I've liked a few Star Treks out of the IDW ones, but I'd still have to go with Star Wars.
Chris?
Constipation or diarrhea?
Line of the podcast.
Is that a head or chest kind of where do you want to get punched kind of
Chris, it's your topic.
I'll go with Star Trek, but I can't justify it in any way.
Sounds good.
The way I look at it is, as long as we got Dark Empire, it'll be Star Wars.
All right. Go ahead, Chris. You got the topic. It's your turn.
All right. For a long time in the industry, any given line from a major publisher that's been the weakest has been their kids' book lines. Can you guys think of any way this can be successful?
Oh.
Marvel had Star Comics. DC has their own DC, kids line. Can we make this successful in some way?
I'm going to jump in there first. One of the things is that they give these – they are constant – now, DC, as we know, doesn't like kids reading their books. But one of the things about these children's lines is they are an afterthought. They do it thinking, oh, we'll just produce some kids' books. And because there is a place in the market for it, to me it seems like they're happy enough to just put it out there without trying to put out the best possible quality. These books often, the art isn't very good, the writing isn't very good, they talk down to the kids even if they don't mean to. The concept of how to write for kids shouldn't be any different than the concept of how to write a superhero book generally anyways. I think it's possible, but I don't know that it'll ever happen. Brett, what do you think?
Well, I think you're right. Like, they're improperly written. They're generally like by these writers and artists that they want to try out to see if they deserve to go on to one of the bigger books. And they're also, you know, generally poorly marketed. I mean, until stores and anybody else like really decides to say, like, start pushing, you know, kids books and say, like, hey, look, parents, we have this whole line of kids books. I mean, I know they have kids books, but quite frankly, for my son, am I going to pull out a copy of The Brave and the Bold based on the animated series, or am I going to just say, you know, there was actually a Teen Titans series that was kind of good for kids, so I'm just going to go straight up to the Teen Titans series.
Keith, your thoughts?
I think we've talked about this before, that what's missing isn't the kids' books per se, it's all ages books. When I started reading, I had read comics since before I can remember, but I started as a collector on my 11th birthday. Power Pack number 1 came out that week, and I saw a collector's item first issue on that, and I bought it. But I still,
and
that
you're
is what
now
I'm
ready to retire.
That's right. I still.
You also have a copy of A-Team number 1. That also was a collector's issue special edition.
That's right. Which actually was worth something for a little bit. But that's when I say my collection started. I actually do have that one comic left. It's in a hard case, even though it's been read 1,000 times. I don't even think it's worth as much as the hard case is. But that is a true all ages book. I could read that. A 25-year-old could have read that book. A 30-year-old could have read that book. And an 11-year-old got a lot out of it.
And a 5-year-old could have read it too.
Yeah, and it wasn't just about not being offensive. It's that the story was complex without being overwhelming. They certainly caught you up every issue so that you were on track. That was Marvel's way at the time. And it still is better than DC, that they have the previously page that I wish DC would put in.
I wish they'd put it in for the first issues of 52.
And it's what I thought was missing from the 52 is that some of those books could have been, you know, they had the Young Justice line. They called it Young Justice, and yet all of those books are still rated for teen. Why isn't Blue Beetle an all-ages book? You know, what would you have to take out of that book to just call it an all-ages book? Mm-hmm. And why was there any fear to do that? Yes, they have the Johnny DC line, and that is for kids, you know, six. Sure there are people that will get something out of that. There are people that get something out of the cartoons, which are for under 10-year-olds. But they're not for me. I'm not interested in them. And that's what we're missing is the, you know, like the X-Men cartoons in the 90s that you could enjoy as an adult. You know, where is that stuff that's just okay for, you know, I can, for 6 years old or not,
you know,
still be enjoyable for an adult?
I was going to mention that. I mean, there was, I think, like 1982, there was the Batman and Tarzan cartoon hour on ABC Kids, I believe it was, you know. And if you go back and watch this Batman cartoon now, it talked down to kids. It had poor writing. It had poor art. It had poor... At some point in time, the shift went to the point where we're going to make a really good cartoon. Kids are going to like it, too, with Batman, in Batman anime series. A 10-year-old could watch that, but so could a 30-year-old. Some point in time, the idea was we're just going to make quality, whereas they were just shitting out Batman in 1982, the cartoon series. No care at all. And that's still the mindset.
Hey, man, that had Batmite in it.
That's still...
That was awesome.
Shut up. That's still... that's still the mindset I think that they have of these children's lines. Is they're still, it's still the same mindset that you're seeing the Saturday morning cartoons in 1982. The Filmation cartoons and such, and these different things. You know, just... The idea that necessarily quality wasn't necessarily what they're going for. If you happen to get some good writers who are doing something, that was fine, but it was almost by luck more than by design. So, I think good topic.
The reason I threw out this topic is that I would love nothing more than DC or another publisher to use the Vertigo model and make a creator-owned all-ages line. We could get Jeff Smith, Kyle Baker, Paul Dini, all these people to create their own books. It could be something really special because it's what the industry is missing right now.
I think that's a great idea. That's an awesome idea.
We could get Frank Miller. I'm sure he'd do great all-ages stuff.
Holy moly, Terror?
Yeah.
His take on Captain Marvel.
What did Captain Marvel think of Muslims after 9/11? Holy moly. Now I'm giving Frank Miller ideas. That's my idea. My turn. I'm going to do a mega-sized four for a dollar. I could do probably four separate four for a dollars on this, but I will do it all as one because I think that everyone's going to be able to pull one out for this topic. What is your favorite new universe title? Because they're all in the four for a dollar, Ben.
The Pit.
Oh, the New Universe graphic novel.
There we go.
Prestige format.
Okay. I'm going with a weird one. I love this book. Nobody else does. I've never heard anyone say a nice word about it. Night Mask.
Interesting. I prefer The Pit. It was a pit. Seriously, when I picked up The Pit and read that, it was like being kicked in the guts, like, oh, man, this is, I mean, it was all ages again, but it was like, wow, this is a big concept. Like, this was blew my mind. Something's going on. This new universe has something big.
Yeah,
happening.
They might as well called it last-ditch effort to save this universe, though.
Maybe, but you know what? Like, it was really, really one of the first, I mean, it was, for me, it was fresh.
Oh, it was the writing on the wall. I knew it was over as soon as they announced that sucker.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it lasted another almost year and a half after that, so I don't know if the writing was...
Yeah, they canceled Night Mask, though.
They did. Yeah, well, they canceled half the line when they did just before they did The Pit, yeah.
And Kickers Inc., which should have never gone off. Like, whose idea was that?
There's some great stories if you read the history of the new universe, because the dreams that they had versus the internal politics.
I have read about some of that. That's awesome.
Because they had, he had this gigantic budget. It was going to be launching this, the same kind of concept as the Ultimate Universe, only with brand new characters and big budgets and big advertising campaigns. And then they're like, okay, well, you can't afford anyone that you hired. So they get credit for creating characters, but none of them actually get to write anything. And, lots of luck. You have to hire people. Going through those books, there's a lot of first book buy for creators that became big, because they had to hire whoever was in the slush pile that had submitted art samples. So there's Ron Lim. There's Ron Lim art in there. There's
what's Ron Lim doing now?
Rodney Ramos is in there.
What's Ron Lim up? What's Ron Lim up to? Anybody know?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Hey, but Keith Giffen also was in that little slush pile. Yeah, he did some Justice issues. The most
Justice
awful
was good
art
too. I like
seen.
Justice.
Oh, I that was when I fell in love with his art style. He did that and Video Jack and a couple others around that time period.
Unreadable.
For mine, I mean, really, I've read almost none of the New Universe, but I do remember picking up the bit, and I remember thinking that it was just a really good comic book. So again, I'm going to go with the bit. Now, I would still be interested in going back and reading through the New Universe and just trying to get into the new Warren Ellis New Universal, but the unfinished series. But I mean, I'm interested in reading it, but it's just
I have an idea. How about we go back and we read some of the New Universes, and then we do a history and legacy of the New Universe as a future podcast? I'd be into that, guys. What do you think?
Everybody pick two series, and we'll
and go from there.
We'll go through it.
Did I mention I also had that idea with Epic?
I pick Alien Legion.
Okay, and then we're gonna do it with Acclaim.
I'll do Gru.
With Acclaim.
All right, guys.
Windjammer count.
There's nothing left, man. I'm not reading Six for Serious.
How about Sax and Violence?
I like that one. Okay.
Peter David. And who was the artist?
That was Perez.
Perez, excellent. All right, Brett, you have the final.
I think we need to read every single Jim Shooter company that he started after.
History and Legacy of Jim Shooter is coming up, folks.
Oh, God, I don't want to read Defiant.
Actually, I would like to read Defiant, because I remember it being, what was it, Plasm? Is that the name of the series?
Do we have... Who has a set of Warriors of Plasm, the trading card comic that they pass around?
I remember it just
because if we're going to read it, we have to start there.
Yep.
Yeah, I just remember it being ass, but I would like to try it again. Because I'm interested. I mean, say one thing about Shooter. He's compelling. He's compelling.
Really what you want to say about him? If you can only say one thing?
If I could describe Jim Shooter five words or less. All right, Brett, it's your calling.
All right, well, because I saw this one again recently, and I thought because we'd been going off on Frank Miller so much, and I just thought that it would be nice that somebody else should go off on Frank Miller. So currently, Alan Moore is having a war of words with Frank Miller, primarily because Miller has kind of spoken out against the Occupy movement. And I do enjoy his "Nothing But a Pack of Louts, Thieves, and Rapists, an Unruly Mob Fed by Woodstock Era Nostalgia and Putrid False Righteousness."
25 years ago, he would have been right in there.
But I just found what I truly love is that, Moore said about Frank Miller. He said, "Frank Miller is someone whose work I've barely looked at for the past 20 years. I thought the Sin City stuff was unreconstructed misogyny. 300 appeared to be wildly ahistoric, homophobic, and just completely misguided. I think that there has probably been a rather unpleasant sensibility apparent in Frank Miller's work for quite a long time." And I think that it's one of those cases where I don't know that I noticed a lot of this stuff because I enjoy Sin City. I enjoy 300. I enjoyed Frank Miller's work for a long time, but after reading Holy Terror, these kind of things just suddenly really came up in my head because it's just like, wow, Holy Terror is so awful. It is so terribly bad, and it really strikes me as being racist and all of those horrible things. And I think that, it's just like, wow, Alan Moore is right about this case. Now, I'm not justifying that Alan Moore's work of late is good either, but I love the fact that he's just coming out and kind of,
at least it's not homophobic,
pointing this out to me. Yeah.
Now that you mention it, now that you said he said those things, kind of like, well, I always knew Sin City was misogynistic, but I never thought of 300 as homophobic until he mentioned it. But now I'm kind of like, I see it. Like, I see his points. I see what you're saying as well. Like, maybe we should analyze the undertones of what he's been putting out there for a long time, and whether or not that there's something behind it that is more offensive or a greater offense or a greater theme of what might be going on in this crazy man's mind.
Yeah, Holy Terror has just really, it's causing me to kind of reflect on Frank Miller's work, and it's not causing me to look at it in a good way.
Well, at some point in time, we are going to be doing a show on Frank Miller, beginning to end of what has gone on through his career from the highs to the lows. At some point in time, we're going to hit him hard like nobody in podcast history has ever done, top to bottom. That is a promise. And it will be all, it will probably be an all Frank Miller show, and it'll probably be one of the most controversial and interesting shows we'll ever do.
It might have swearing.
It will have swearing. We'll talk about Holy Terror in depth.
We have to talk about Holy Terror and Death be swearing going into the episode, and then during, and then following up.
Yeah,
I have to look at that.
Anyways, what do you think on research. his topics there, Chris? On Brett's topic.
Well, I have to start by saying, Alan Moore, who doesn't he have a problem with?
There is that.
Alan Moore has picked on everybody. I don't hate Holy Terror as much as you guys do. I don't.
Oh, you're
like
a racist. You're welcome.
Okay.
he's not, folks. It's a joke.
No, he's
a fascist.
That's right.
I breezed through Holy Terror and went, okay, yeah, it's Frank Miller masturbating. I've seen it before. I'll see it again.
Do you have a relationship with Frank Miller as well?
It's nothing you would like to reveal, Chris.
No, keep going.
It's not something that I'm particularly offended by. Frank has always done this. It's just I don't happen to agree with him this time.
Well, he certainly was doing this with Batman and Robin. All-Star Batman and Robin,
Which I actually didn't hate. I put it on the same level as The Dark Knight 2. Where it had more interesting concepts, and I thought if he actually had drawn it, it would have been better. I thought Jim Lee's art actually clashed with the writing style, and we didn't get what he was trying to get
across.
All right,
it's not the Jim or the Frank Miller podcast yet. So you're saying you don't think he's a racist, homophobe, or just all-around messed up dude?
Yeah, but I always thought that.
Oh, okay.
He's always an artist, man. I love Robert Crumb. Would I want to be left in a room with him? Probably not. He's creepy.
It's funny because that's
I feel the same
about
way
you.
About Frank Miller.
I think
I think Chris is raising an interesting point that there is a difference between the artist and the art, and it's sometimes hard to get those apart. And the world we live in of Twitter, and particularly Twitter, but the way we get people's opinions, we're forced to hear what they think on subjects that we wouldn't necessarily hear them talk about in the past. And when you like someone's art, I heard this on another podcast called Around Comics just today. When you like someone's art, and you think that you start making this connection that you they must think like you think. And then if they don't, it can be quite jarring. An example to me is that Martin Sheen is one of my favorite actors. He's also a 9/11 truther, and I think that's a vile thing. Can I reconcile those things? Can I watch him perform as an actor when I know this about him as an individual? And that's the kind of thing that you go through with Frank Miller, that particularly the past few years. The idea that Frank Miller would side with the 99% against the 1% was ludicrous to me. The Frank Miller who owns the rights to 300, which was a $500 million movie, and owns the rights to Sin City, which was a $500 million movie, isn't closer to that 1% than he is the bottom of the 99%. It's silly. I mean, he's a multimillionaire. He's not on my side. And the idea that his opinion should matter to me was also a bit silly. That he knows anything about world politics is, you know, why would he? You know, his work as a writer is completely separate. I do like that this little tiff, this little blow up between them, war of words when they don't talk to each other, has led Alan Moore to come back to write a comic book. Alan Moore had walked away from comics for years. He will be writing, as far as I had heard today, he'll be writing a prose piece for the Occupy Comics special that's being funded through Kickstarter. So the first Alan Moore comic book will come up because of this little row.
Cool.
So you're saying there's fruits from Frank Miller's breakdown? Is that we can now start reaping good stuff from it?
I think that it catalyzes other people to start. I think that these discussions are good. If you have a problem with Holy Terror, why? And if you have a problem with it, how far back does it go? Because I'm going to reread Dark Knight 2, and I want to see if I'm still comfortable with it. And I actually, All-Star Batman and Robin I didn't have a problem with. I thought it was a bit goofy, but I didn't think there was anything that offended me in it. I just thought it was a bit over the top, as he often goes. But I am curious, actually, to go back to Dark Knight 2. And see what kind of worldview is being presented to me.
You know, I, as somebody who has watched wrestling for all these years, my point of view probably is a little different, because if you don't put aside the fact that what you're watching on TV is different from how disgusting many of these individuals are or were back screen, you couldn't watch wrestling. So I probably, you know, because there is, you know, but it's true though. I mean, I haven't been able to watch a Chris Benoit match since that happened, right? And I don't think I ever will. And there's certain things. There's certain things where you just go, I don't know if I'm at that point with Frank Miller yet, but tell you the truth, Holy Terror made me there. And then Brett really hit it home with it when reading this out to me. It's pretty close to getting there with him. Something's starting to feel really uncomfortable.
Can you still laugh at O.J. Simpson in the police squad?
You know what? No. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Did I just compare Frank Miller to an accused murderer? Yes, I did.
Oh, yes.
Neither one of them has been found guilty of anything.
I will still order anything he puts out.
But you know what? Well, I can't watch him in the
Naked Gun. I read an O.J. Simpson.
You know what's funny? Because I can't watch him in the Naked Gun. But it's funny, right? I can't watch him in the Naked Gun. But that's a comedy, and I'm supposed to be laughing at him. But I can watch him in Capricorn 1, which is a drama. So it's, I think it is interesting that way. So, all right, okay, guys, I think, Brett, why don't we go out, plugs and any last thoughts?
All right, fair enough. Let's see now. Well, again, visit our website. It's wetalkpodcast.com. You can check out all of our new podcasts and a couple of blogs. And I'm on Twitter. It's Brett_WeTalk. And then, of course, it's Brett@wetalkpodcast.com. That's my email. Nobody uses it, but it's there. You can use it if you want to.
Pretty pictures in those books. All right. Keith, go ahead. Final thoughts and
All right, well, I've got two last little bits I want to get in. Alpha Comics in Calgary and Happy Harbor Comics in Edmonton will be carrying Red 10.
Excellent.
Thanks to Scott Davis and myself, credit where it's due, who talked to Tyler James on Twitter and talked to Alpha Comics, and we're expecting that'll be in. I think Alpha Comics said the 14th of December, so we'll be making a road trip over there. To, that'll be 8 days away from when we're recording this. We'll make a little road trip over there because I've promised Alpha Comics that we'll be, that's where we'll be buying it. And the other one is check out a website called comicsforheroes.org. This is a pal of mine from Twitter. He's just started this program. He's still in the bit of the planning stages, trying to figure out how it all works. But what he's trying to do is create a not-for-profit that, and a website that helps you get comic books that you don't want in your collection anymore to kids, children's hospitals, and troops overseas. I think it's a fantastic idea, and I wish him a lot of good wishes going forward that he can get this off the ground.
That's an awesome
idea. I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and I am Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com. Please send us an email. Tell us what you think of what we're babbling on about.
Yeah, no, that's an awesome idea. Of course, a hoarder like Chris doesn't have anything he wants to give up, but Chris.
Maybe we got some holy terrors that we can send.
We wouldn't do that to the fine folks in overseas serving the country. Why would we?
No, but we could give it to our enemies.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We'll send it to the Red Cross.
Maybe then somebody will come and target Frank Miller.
Chris. Okay, final thoughts. Who the hell is Chris Benoit? And I'm Chris at We Talk Comic Podcast.
Not even close.
We Talk Podcast. Damn it!
I like the fact that we get like a new one every week. It's like, what's it going to be this week?
Somewhere that only emails Chris. We never hear a word from. And they're like, why do these guys never respond to my emails?
Awesome.
Chris changes his emails more than he changes his underwear.
All right. I'm Mo underscore WeTalk on Twitter. And you know what else? I'm Mo at WeTalkPodcasts.com. And I'm hoping that somebody out there, actually, what I'm looking for is somebody out there to email me. What I've been really in the mood to do lately is to is to watch some cartoons that I never might have missed. Some really good cartoons. If there's some really good cartoons that somebody could recommend to me that are kind of obscure or something like that, I would love it if somebody would send me an email with those. Other than that, I want to say that I just recently heard that that the U.S. Congress has officially listed pizza as a vegetable. And I want to say score one for the good guys. That's an awesome thing. Keith, you have something you want to say there, obviously. You're shaking your head.
Yeah, that never happened.
Yeah, it did.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
In Moland, I know that it was, but in Moland, it was already a vegetable.
That's right. You know how I like my vegetables? You know how I like my vegetables is with, extra meat, lots of cheese, and no vegetables. That's kind of how I
like.
Yeah, hey, Keith, you know what? Keith, do you know what the worst part about eating vegetables is? Having to pull back the bed sheets first. OUT.